thank you. Thank you, Eldar.
I would now invite the audience here in London and on the web to ask questions. Can I ask the audience here in London to wait for the microphone so we can get the sound on the web as well? Can I just repeat the internet viewers? You can ask questions by pressing the submit question button, and it will pop up on my laptop here, and I'll ask the question on your behalf. With that, let's take the first question, Ian Reid.
Hi, it's Ian Reid from Macquarie. Two questions. First, Eldar, you say you're going to raise debt in 2009, and if lower price, you told us what your break-even oil price is. So if it's the oil prices at this level for some period of time, gearing is going to rise rather quickly. I wonder if you've got a gearing target in mind for you had one a few years ago, but as oil prices have raced up, you've rather abandoned that. So I wonder if you have a point at which you feel comfortable with gearing in the future. And the second thing is, the NPD produced a number showing oil decline in Norway averaging about 9% to 10% next year. I wonder if you agree with that for your portfolio, and if it's not that number, what do you think it is for the Statoil portfolio? Thanks very much.
Well, I guess the first question was to Eldar, and I can leave it to you if I comment a few words on the decline rate. The basis on which we have calculated our decline rate in the period 2009 to 2012 is to take those projects that are on peak at year-end 2008 and looked at the same project at the end of 2012. It contains oil and gas projects. It includes those activities we have put in place in order to fight decline, and on that basis, we have arrived at 5% roughly annual decline, and that is the best estimate we can make based on a field-by-field analysis. The numbers provided by NPD is, as far as I understand, it's only looking at oil, and we think that the basis they have done their calculation would not depart significantly from the approach that we have taken, but we have used a slightly different angle to addressing the issue.
Okay. When it comes to the debt situation and the capital structure question, I think it's important for us to maintain financial flexibility through the whole turmoil that we are into. That's the starting point, and also we do have a good starting point in terms of a strong balance sheet. And I would say we have been slightly conservative over the last couple of years, and I think we are benefiting from that strong balance sheet now. We had a net debt to capital of around zero in connection with the third quarter. That will increase slightly now in connection with the fourth quarter because we have paid for actually four transactions and also had tax payments in this quarter. This means that we have been very comfortable with zero. You can pull out sort of optimal capital structure arguments, which could take us in the direction of a higher gearing level, and I would say we are definitely comfortable with raising debt in this situation to take us through this situation and be committed both to the dividend policy and to strict CapEx program. So I cannot give you an exact number or any range or anything like that. That was very important back in 2001 when we did the IPO. At this point, I don't think that is wise, but we can definitely we have quite a lot of capacity to take on the balance sheet to take on more debt as we see it today, a necessary amount of debt to take us through this situation and maintain the policies that we have confirmed.
Thank you. That's a question from the internet about CapEx. We'll just take that in the same one here. Aymeric de Villaret from Société Générale, he asks about elaborating on the CapEx, and you've just done that, but what is the impact of Chesapeake in 2009 numbers? What is the split between Statoil Hydro and Chesapeake, and what would 2009 CapEx be without Chesapeake?
Well, as I said, on the impact on production is marginal, somewhat uncertain, but we see a good progress in terms of increasing the drilling capacity on the Marcellus. So far so good, but I cannot give you an exact number, but it's marginal. When it comes to the CapEx from Marcellus, I will not be specific on projects, but what I can say is that if you look at the overall combined transactions that we made in 2008 and the effect of these on the CapEx program for this year, that represents approximately 1 billion Norwegian kroner, and that includes the CapEx for the Marcellus drilling activities.
I guess we have a CapEx roughly on the same level as we indicated the last year to the capital market, but we have included in that number this year two new assets, the remaining 50% on Peregrino, as well as the capital expenditures on Chesapeake.
And that sum is $1 billion?
Yeah,
$1 billion. I have a list here of people, but James Hubbard from Morgan Stanley first.
Thank you. Sorry, just to come back to your underlying decline. If I look at the 2012 guidance, it seems as though there's an implicit increase there in your assumed underlying, what you term underlying declines over the next few years are going to be. I'm just wondering, is that because your underlying decline is post, as you say, your measures to offset that, i.e. infill drilling, the producing wells that you're drilling, and you've made a deliberate decision to do less of that activity, or is it because your understanding of the reservoir is still evolving? And the read-through, of course, on that second point is, does that mean we could be sitting here in a year's time and looking at an assumption of 6% underlying decline? So there's that, and then one more question. You mentioned positioning for softer rig market. I know there's a big delay here, and it takes years to feed through, but on the leading edge contracts that you're now negotiating, are you seeing a softening in the cost environment?
But first of all, we indicated last year when we met you, if you looked at the period from 2008 to 2012, that we had a rough indication of decline rate of 4. Now, in the 2009 and 2012 period, we have increased by 1 percentage point. That is partly driven by slightly higher decline rate than we anticipated last year. There's something to do with that there are two different periods that we are measuring, but also a slight impact, as Eldar talked about in his presentation, related to the measures that we have taken due to the financial turmoil and the economic environment. In terms of cost, generally, as you may know, we cancelled a rig tendering process a few weeks back. That was based on our belief that the bids that we got at that time was not at the level that we wanted them. So we have the patience to wait. We have indicated that we have secured our full rig program for 2010. So we will follow the market closely and try to find the balance of committing at the right time, but also at the right price. Generally, we are working in markets, and if the current environment continues with lower oil prices, and most of the other sort of operators do, as we do, managing our portfolio also in terms of short-term cash and flexibility, you should expect to see some decline in demand, and subsequently there will be a rip-off effect, in my view, to the rest of the industry. I think those that are particularly impacted that have the highest potential is, of course, those where there currently has been the highest margins. We have seen, I think, throughout the latter or the first part of 2008 also, at least in some segments, some leveling off, and that will be further accelerating our view due to the financial turmoil.
That is Charles Waller. It's after Sean Jonalaisen.
shortfall with new investment management. And we've heard five times the commitment to dividend policy, which is somewhat helpful, but with a special element, it's not particularly helpful in the down cycle and in us understanding your commitment to the absolute level of dividend payments. There's something else you said earlier, which was you want to keep it competitive, and maybe that is a little bit more helpful. Can you talk about what you see as a competitive dividend and really what you'd hope to achieve at the absolute level through what you know, most of us here believe is a temporary tightness or looseness in the oil market? And just on the cash neutrality, can you talk about the gas price that goes with that $55? I understand, of course, the piece that comes from the long-term contracts, but the floating market gas. Thank you.
Well, on the dividend policy, we have given the reason for why we are not giving you the exact number today, and that is because we have not closed our book. We have to do the auditing, we have to do the discussion with the board before we can do it, and we plan to do it when we present the fourth quarter results in February. So what we have tried to communicate in a forceful way today is that we are committed to the policy, which means, one, that we commit to an increase in ordinary dividend, and secondly, that we commit to the level that we have indicated over cycle, 45% to 50%. So the only or the additional sort of comfort I can give about our thinking is the way the company has delivered since we were IPO'd in 2001, where I think we have shown throughout several periods that we are committed to be competitive and also try to find the right balance between direct return to the shareholders as well as executing on the growth strategy that we are running. I think part of your question is that you are addressing the extraordinary sort of dividend that we have introduced, and there are no changes in that thinking or the policy so far, so that we potentially have to come back to.
On this cash neutrality question, what I can say is that when we give a statement like 55, that is based on a quite detailed model and hopefully quite correct model of this. So then there are the assumptions, and the gas is an important part. Approximately 40% of our production volumes is actually gas. The main part of this is related to the long-term contracts, and we know all the details of how these contracts are related to oil type of products and other commodities. Then there is a component which is more liquid, and we have simply made reasonable assumptions that there are links between these liquid markets and also the long-term contracts that we are faced with. So we have made reasonable assumptions and try to be consistent when you look at the gas markets and the oil markets for the short term, and we have quite good visibility, to put it that way, in the short term.
I'll take a short term question from the internet, then Jorn Olaisen, and then Connie. It's from Jeffrey Stern at Chevrolet. With regards to CapEx, what is your Norwegian kroner US dollar exchange rate assumption for 2009, and what is the level of Statoil Hydro's hurdle rate? 2008 net income was massively impacted by a negative non-cash forex effect. Does the payout ratio targeted 45-50, is that based on clean earnings, i.e. excluding those non-cash items?
I guess that's the question for you, Andrei.
Yeah, I think there is a reason why we have moved into US dollar on our guidance, and that is that basically that's where the currency, that's the original currency. And then you can make pretty much your own assumptions as to what kind of or exchange rates you would apply. But basically, if you take sort of a 13.5 billion and translate that into an assumption of, let's say, 6 Norwegian kroner per US dollar, which was the last year's assumption when we used Norwegian kroner, that takes us into approximately 80 billion, which is the same range as we guided last year, and now we have included these transactions. Hurdle rate, I think we just made a decision a couple of years ago not to talk too much about that. It's something we would like to keep to ourselves for competitive reasons. What I can confirm is that we definitely have a hurdle rate where there is some distance, some cushion between the cost of capital as we see it and the hurdle rate that we apply for our decision making. When it comes to the payout ratio and the way to measure that, actually our dividend policy is quite specific on that. It says that this is related to the IFRS, and the IFRS gives the kind of accounting volatility that I was talking about. So that is the formal starting point. Then I would like to add that obviously we will take these non-cash components into consideration along with a whole lot of other components that goes into this overall consideration, but we will take it into consideration when we conclude on the final dividend. But the starting point and the formal starting point is the IFRS as it looks in our account.
John Leisen, and then Colin Swiss afterwards.
A couple of questions to production guidance and one to exploration. On the 2012 production target, how much of that has been sanctioned? And secondly, last year you said you have the ambition to produce 1.5 million barrels of oil equivalent in 2015 from Norway. Does that ambition still stand? And then the final question is on your exploration. You're now saying you have priority to quality exploration. I thought that's also the case, but could you tell us what you mean by that? Does it mean drilling more in mature regions, or does it mean more drilling, less seismic in new areas? I see you're drilling, you're keeping your number of wells in Norway and reducing them internationally. Does it mean moving back to exploration in mature Norwegian areas?
And if you comment on the production, I can comment on the exploration part. And of course, we're always focused on a quality exploration. I think what we try to focus is that the merger has actually given us new insight and also given us a bigger portfolio on how to evaluate the quality of our portfolio. We have high-graded the portfolio, and I think the results for Statoil Hydro in 2008 when it comes to delivery of new barrels through the drill bit is quite sort of encouraging in that sense. In Norway, most of the wells will be drilled around the current infrastructure, and the most part of the exploration wells are in that area, and the rest is in more high impact and new areas, particularly further north in the Norwegian Sea.
Okay, on the... Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. On the 2012 production question, I'll give you some guidance on that. Of that number, approximately 75% is related to fields that are producing today. Approximately 15% comes from sanctioned developments which are not producing today. Around 5% is related to measures, including IOR measures that we have planned, specific concrete plans for. And the remaining 5% is non-sanctioned type of projects, including fast-track exploration developments and so on, related to infill. So that's a rough, but sort of the best guidance I can give today. Then this 1.5 million barrels perspective in a 10-year horizon, was that the question? That is something we confirm. We maintain that 10-year perspective as an ambition for our operations and development of the Norwegian continental shelf.
All right, Colin Smith. And also,
two questions, if I may. Just again on the dividend, but a slightly different issue. You have in the past sanctioned share buybacks, and I wonder if that's something you plan to do for this year, and also if you could just comment on your view about share buybacks versus the special dividend or extraordinary dividend component. And my second question was, last year you set three short-term objectives by which you should be judged. One was meeting your production guidance, which you clearly have for this year. One was meeting the delivery of merger synergies, which you planned for this year. And the third was operational performance. We've actually had quite a few issues this year, both with the on-off nature of the Kvitebjørn repair, the recent shutdown at Kristin, and a number of other issues around oil spills and so on and so forth. And I just wondered if you could comment about how you think you've actually performed on that third objective that you set for yourselves, and if you feel that you haven't done as well as you should, what you're planning to do about it.
If you want to comment on the dividend, I will talk to the you know, the maintenance programs and how we do that to keep the regularity up. We have changed the organization completely, so we have three areas that are roughly each producing or responsible for 1 million barrels per day in production, and their only focus is to execute safe and efficient, reliable operations. So this is the biggest move we have done initially. Now, in the integration process, and first now we are moving offshore, we will create a common operating structure, the same way of operating the offshore installations, so that we can move best practice quicker and have more transparency and openness and equalness between the different platforms in the way they are operating. So those two actions will help. Then we have standardized in a better way how we are planning the maintenance stop, and as I mentioned in my introduction, all maintenance stop this year, with one small exception, has delivered as planned the number of days we had planned for, and that is a significant improvement from previously. We have not raised our performance in regularity or production efficiency since last year, but we stick to the target of increasing it to 90% in 2012, and some of these measures that we are taking are organizational in nature and by definition takes longer time. So that is a guidance that we still stick to, and we will expect to see improvements already next year.
Okay.
Sorry.
Try to answer it. As you know, share buybacks is specifically stated as an integrated part of our toolbox and dividend policy, and there's no plan to change that. Last year, we decided not to go ask for a mandate on share buybacks because the government were in the process of buying, increasing the shares in the company, and to have an arrangement with the government in such a situation was not something we considered the right thing to do. For 2008, that opportunity is gone, so that will be a cash dividend in any case. Going forward, I think we will maintain the this component as a part of the policy. Whether we will ask for a new mandate on share buybacks or not, I don't know. But basically, I think we look upon share buybacks as a tool to have that and a possibility to be more flexible in terms of returning cash to shareholders than the ordinary the annual dividend process is in the Norwegian context. So it's an additional tool, and it might be something that we ask for to have in the toolbox, but I cannot be more specific than that. And I think the fundamental part of our dividend policy is still sort of the cash component going forward.
I guess it's fair also to say that there have been some mixed signals how useful you shareholders feel that is. So I guess as we entertain in a dialogue with you moving forward, we would appreciate also feedback on how you look at the different elements and the components on returning shares or capital directly to the shareholders.
Okay, now it's Tom.
One question on NCS exploration and one on project milestones. The disappointment on Odessa, which you had hoped high hopes for, does that change your outlook and strategy for Barents Sea? And maybe a small follow-up. The report on the email on Fulla, which George said 200 meters oil column, can you dismiss that as outside the realm of possibilities, or is it no comment? On project milestones, is both Tahiti and Corrib slipping to 2010, or is Tahiti still on for 2009? And finally, on Shah Deniz, phase two, are you working towards 2011-12? Still. And Vadoro, one knowledgeable person said that even if it's your only LNG position outside Norway, 2015 to 2020 is more likely than 2010 to 2015. Do you have any comments on that?
Well, there were many questions. If you take some of the international projects, I will talk about the Barents Sea, and it's fair to conclude that we have concluded all our drilling commitment for the 19th round. We have made the discovery, but I think it's fair also to say at this stage we have not reached or identified the key in that region, so we need to continue to explore and learn in that area. And of course we had hoped for Obisum, among others, to give more definitive sort of signals or learnings. But we will continue to be active in the Barents Sea. When it comes to this email that also I read about in the paper, I prefer not to comment on that at this stage. We will release news to the market when we're ready to do it.
Okay, then there were some specific questions on projects, and could just confirm that on the Tahiti, that is still on schedule for this summer. No change to that. On Corinth, it has been a challenging project for many, many years. There are still challenges, in particular related to the approval processes and the timeliness of that. Our forecast is end of 2010. I do not exclude that there might be sort of a slip into 2011, but it's in the 2010-11 time horizon that we're looking at. Shah Deniz, phase two, very important project for us, highly complex from many dimensions, both from geopolitical perspectives. I'm not ready to give any sort of a time schedule. There's a lot of work that needs to be developed and have a firm time schedule for when this can be taken into the next phase. That is difficult. But when you indicated 2011, 2012, that is definitely too early for launching production from that asset. On the Envadoro, I have no further, not even information on that.
Okay, I'll take a couple of questions from the internet and then Paul Spedding. It's from Helge André Martinsen at Nordea Markets. Could you please indicate the split between international and Norwegian volumes for your production guiding in 2009 and 2012?
Well, I guess we're not giving specific numbers on the business areas. We're guiding on the corporate level, but I think a fair assumption for 2009 it's basically to have the same sort of relationship as you will see in 2008. For 2012, we can indicate that we said last year 1,550 for the Norwegian continental shelf and 650 for the international part of the operation. I think the best way you can manage your analysis is probably to make the numbers for Norwegian continental shelf a little bit less than 1,550 and the international part of the contribution a little bit more than 650. I think that will be the best sort of guidance we can give at this stage.
It's Paul Spedding.
There's a question on your break-even number of $55. I mean, clearly there are tax lags that go on in this world, and the tax that you paid this year, some of which will be effectively being paid on $100 plus barrel. I'm curious as to whether you took this into account in that $55 number, i.e. Did you strip out the $100 plus tax that might be paid into early 2009, or is it in there? If it is in there, would you be able to perhaps give us a cleaned up break-even cash flow number?
Hello?
Well, the guidance that we give now, we are in 2009, and the guidance we give for 2009, that is based on the best assumptions and the best knowledge and facts that we have. That includes facts related to the tax payments and assumptions on what that could be for this year and into 2009. So everything, every piece of information that we have on the relationship, also the general on I mentioned gas a couple of minutes ago, and the relationship and the time delays that we have on gas, long-term gas contracts, all of that is modeled and taken into account. So this is sort of the way we look at the actual you know, cash flow, the best way we can see it, including the tax effects. And if you ask for a specific number on some student on tax, I cannot do that. It's, I haven't got that information. $55 is the best estimate for 2009, given all the factors that influence the cash flows and that we have that we understand today, and the best way we can understand it.
It's Tim Whittaker from Barclays.
Tim Whittaker, Barclays Capital. I have a question on your NPV break-even chart. It includes a lot of projects, and I'm presuming that that goes from very small to very large, such as Stockton. I'm also presuming that large projects are at a high cost end. So are you concerned with that? And also, therefore, does that mean that most of the large projects which your future growth break even way above the 40 average, which I presume is a straightforward arithmetic average of the projects. But if you were to weight the average to the size of the projects, where do you think that number would be?
Right. Well, I try to address that in my presentation and said quite specifically that the largest projects, they are also the projects with the higher, with the highest break-even prices, and also the highest flexibility, and that is very important because to have that flexibility and to be willing to use it to capture the benefits from optimizing the timing and increasing the value creation, that is very important. So that slide was based on the current cost environment as it is today. We expect to see developments, positive developments in that context going forward. But it is true, the biggest projects, largest projects, they are to the right. And if you weighted these projects, then it's a question how you chop the projects and so on. But that would increase slightly the 40 US dollar, but not significantly as such.
Thank you. Could you also comment on the reduction in your CapEx this year? Is that mostly a reduction activity, or have you managed to also include lower cost elements? And could you maybe estimate how much the reduction comes from things that are costing less than you had previously assumed relative to activity?
Most of what you see in the reduction in capital spending is due to own prioritization, and we have not been able to factor in significant cost reductions at this stage. I think it will take longer time before that stick, as you commented earlier.
I'll take a question from the internet, and then it's a good one that you said. It's from Jason Kenney at ING. What is the potential for further asset write-downs at the full year 08 results for projects indicated or initiated or acquired in the last 24 months, particularly given the potential for lower valuations versus original book value? In particular, is there potential impact for U.S. GOM assets from Norsk Hydro or Canada, Venezuela, heavy oil, or even Snøhvit, given the issue here?
I guess that is a question for the accounting expert, Eli.
Yeah, well, first on the dividend issue, I think I commented on that in general to non-cash items, and it's something that we'll be taking into the overall assessment. When it comes to write-downs, first of all, I have to say that we are obviously into a process, and it's very difficult for me to be ahead of that process to look into assets that might be at risk. That's something we do every quarter, also this quarter. When it comes to sort of specific risks, I would say that the transactions that we have made, and it was specifically mentioned the last 24 months, are related to the Canadian, the Marcellus and so on. These are big assets, lots of flexibility, and that gives an opportunity for us to sort of time the development in a way which secures value creation and makes them more robust. And they're also long-term, in particular the oil sands, long-term. And we have stated quite clearly today that we are hanging on to the long-term fundamental view on commodities and oil and gas prices going forward. So basically, there shouldn't be any sort of material risks related to this. I think the risks are mostly related to assets which are sort of more into the short-term markets and the short-term commodity environment. But I cannot issue any guarantees into this process, and I have to let that process go before we conclude.
All right, it's Goodman Isak from DNB North.
Quick question on Stockman. Do you think Gazprom has the financial strength to lift that project and the number two over Tamar? I would expect a capital investment decision on that project maybe in 2010 or 11. What is your response to that? And when do you expect Stockman to start up? When it comes to the resource base there, do you use the same number as the Total uses, 800 million barrels of oil equivalents?
Well, first on the current status of Stockman, the key focus now for all of the three participants in the Stockman Development Company is that is to mature the project technically, and that is exactly what we will do. Of course, the newly introduced economic turmoil is also impacting Russia, but the plan so far has been to mature the project towards an FID either at the end of this year or next year. That is the most recent comment that has been given from the company, and I'm not prepared to give any other signals as only a shareholder in this company at this stage. And basically, we are using the same approach related to the resources as Total, but what we have not yet confirmed is that we will be able to book it. We will come back to that at a later stage. But the size of the resources and the economic outcome should be the same.
Okay, there's another question on the internet, and then Neil. Your equity, it's from Helge Andre Martins at the Nordea. Your equity production guiding for 2012 remains unchanged compared to your guiding for at the Capital Markets Day in 2008. Marcellus and a 50% stake in Peregrino were acquired during 2008, adding 100,000 barrels per day of equity production in 2012. Divestments done during 2008 have had minor effect on 2012 production. Could you please indicate what has happened here?
Well, we tried to give that explanation. Basically, there are, on the positive side, we have the acquisitions. On the negative side, you have two factors, predominantly the divestment and the change in contractual terms in Libya as well as in Venezuela. And then we have been prudent because it's very hard to forecast these days given the economic turmoil. Therefore, we felt that the best guidance we could give at this stage was to keep the level as some of all these factors moving in different directions.
Neil Morton.
It's Neil Morton from MS Global. We don't hear very much nowadays about your knock-knock strategy. And if anything, that's more applicable given the fact that Statoil Hydro is now the undisputed national champion of Norway. Can you perhaps talk a little bit about that and also comment on the possibility that resource nationalism reverses during a period of low oil prices and this apparent competitive advantage of your company diminishes?
Well, I feel that after the merger, we have taken an even clearer profile of a national oil company, and I can assure you that we still work extremely hard on that basis. I participated myself in what we call the National Oil Company Forum in Beijing a few months back, which is a big event that we are organizing every 18th month. We are working on that basis in Indonesia, in Russia, in Algeria, in Mexico, in Brazil. And I think our opportunity set is expanded, not narrowed by that approach. But I can also sort of reflect that some of these transactions and some of these approaches take much longer time to mature and develop than we typically see in a more traditional M&A project in this industry. In terms of resource nationalism, I think we all saw that coming in a very, very strong way in 2007 and 2008 and maybe even before, as the oil prices increased, the sentiment became stronger and stronger. I think that what you see now will regardless of whether you are a resource holder or you are a supplier or an operator as we are, you have to make some reassessments and think how you best preserve and develop value, and I think that will happen with national governments around the world as well if the current pricing environment prevails.
We'll take an internet question and then it's turn on down. It's from Emeric de Villaret at Société Générale. Can you elaborate regarding the situation in the Ukraine? What are the consequences for gas sales through Europe? And do you sell more gas now than to what extent? Does it give you confidence regarding gas volumes sold by Statoil Hydro in the first quarter of 2009?
Well, first of all, I would say that the conflict of this type is not necessarily positive for gas because it is incentivizing others with an incentive like nuclear and others to develop their business. Having said that, on the short term, this has no big impact on Statoil Hydro. As you know, most times during the winter, we are running more or less close to full capacity, and these long-term contracts have typically a flexibility where the customers can take a minimum level or a maximum level, and typically they now run at the maximum level. We believe, nevertheless, that the attention and the wish for more gas from Norway will increase. And the only long-term response we really can offer is to continue to explore, as we do, and I indicated maybe some new gas opportunities in the Norwegian Sea, but also that the government in Norway gives Statoil Hydro and others access to new high-potential areas. And we are working hard to achieve that.
Then it's one bar.
Maybe of more interest for the oil market than your portfolio, but I'll ask it anyway. On Iraq, the operational environment seems to be improving, and Statoil Hydro and other international oil companies seem to be following it with interest. Do you see the opportunity of a bid round for renovation projects and even a license round this year?
Well, I won't comment on this year, but I can confirm that we follow it closely, that we are qualified, that we have a dialogue. So far there have been two issues that need to be solved. One is, of course, the security situation, and secondly, that there is a clear petroleum law framework that we can work within. I don't dare to give any estimates of timing, but I can confirm that we are following it.
There's a question on the first row there.
Yes.
Hi, this is Kenan Najafu, Exane BNP Paribas. Considering that the Norwegian production is maturing, and considering that the split of gas, proportion of gas is increasing, considering the oil price environment and gas price environment, do you see the special petroleum tax in Norway being reduced over time?
Well, I think the industry made an attempt back 4 or 5 years to adjust the tax system. I think we can only conclude at this stage that this was not particularly successful. The best guidance I can give at this stage to our investors is that there will be no change in the petroleum tax in Norway. I can hope, but I think this is... You should not leave on my hope, but on the guidance, and this is, I think, the best guidance we can give.
Take a question from the internet. Okay, Andre Martin from Nordea Markets. How much of the estimated synergy effects of 6 billion will affect the unit production costs? And the same question goes for the additional 1.5 billion of cost reductions.
Hello?
It's a good question, and I haven't got a good answer for you. Definitely part of this will affect the unit production cost. Part of the onshore downsizing will be allocated and you know, lead to less allocated cost on the unit production cost. The offshore process that we are now into is also going to have impact on the on the unit production cost. I mentioned examples on procurement, on best practices, which also was very much related to offshore operations like logistics and so on. So yes, it will have an impact. When, as I say, the main reason why we actually keep the guidance level of 33 to 36 and indicated that we will be in the upper part of the range this year, we will stay in that range going into 2012, is that we will see synergies into the unit production cost going forward. So that's our best, sort of the most important tool for us to fight the cost increases and to keep the level and be able to stay within that range for the next 3 to 4 years.
Thank you. Then we got Anna Jørn from Handelsbanken there.
Thank you. A couple of questions related to Marcellus Chesapeake Corporation. First, are you willing to comment on break-even on that project? And secondly, how many wells are you going to drill in this year? And since you now have owned it for a couple of months, as you see today, what's the major challenges for you in that operation going forward?
If you want to comment on the break-even, Eldar, I can just say that we have already established an excellent relationship with Chesapeake. We have we are in the process of seconding people into the organization. We have established our own asset team. We meet frequently. We have a meeting on the CEO level next year or next week. So we are concentrating both on the Marcellus asset, but also on looking at what kind of options you can see outside the U.S. And what we have seen so far is to us indicating that it was a right move, and we have confirmed so far the assumptions that we made for the transaction.
Comment on the break-even prices. I think obviously the kind of environment that we see today, the prices we see today, is robust to face these developments. I should also remind you that the location of the Marcellus is at the high end, very attractive locations, and if you compare that to the Hungry Hub, we see, you know, quite significant higher value of gas into the New York area. And that has been confirmed since we did the acquisition. So, you know, we are talking about break-even prices in the range of $5 per US dollar per million BTU, and obviously that's going to depend on the cost framework going forward. And I think currently we also see the potential to reduce the cost on drilling activities in the US.
That's Christine Tiscarino here.
What type of crude oil price do you need for your enhanced oil recovery to be profitable in the Norwegian continental shelf?
Well, we cannot provide one specific number on that. It depends a bit on what kind of project that we are working on. But of course, there are some projects that are not necessarily profitable on the short term. If the oil price is 40 and not 100, as Eldar touched upon in his presentation.
But are current oil prices impacting or having a big impact on your enhanced oil recovery program that you have?
It has no big impact, but as Eldar indicated, there are some slight impact on the numbers that we have presented today, but they are relatively small. So far, no big impact.
And lastly, do you still have appetite for acquisitions?
Well, I've said that given the fact that we have been successful in exploration, that we have been targeting a few acquisitions the last few years, we have built a significant resource base. To mature that is our first priority. That is where we are concentrating the main part of our organization. But of course, I think it's a responsibility for any corporate management team to follow the market, particularly in a turmoil like this. and I can confirm that we do that as well. But it's not on the first on the priority list at this stage.
Thank you very much.
That's a question from the internet from Rahat Kijal at the Deutsche Bank. What long-term oil prices are you using for your in-house project evaluations?
Well, a few years back, all of us gave the base assumptions for how we were evaluating our project. We are not doing that anymore because we feel that is part of trying to stick together or find competitive proposals in exploration and in licensing rounds and even in M&A. So we will not provide a specific number, but what we do is that we have one base number that we are using as a base, and then we are running scenarios with one low price and one higher price to make sure that we both look at cost efficiency and also that we are sure that we are, or as sure as possible that we are finding the right development concept so we can maximize value also if the prices are higher than we anticipate.
On that count, we will have to break here the Q&A session. You're of course always welcome to contact us in investor relations, and our contact details are on the website www.statoilhydro.com. During 2009, we will have several opportunities for you to get an update on our business. In addition to our quarterly presentations, we will have we'll be hosting seminars as we did during 2008, like the exploration seminar and the gas seminar. Our next event is the 17th of February, fourth quarter 2008 presentation. That ends today's strategy update session. Thank you very much and goodbye.